At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Her Spirit podcast with me, Louise Minchin, and the lovely Annie Emerson. And Annie, we had a chat this week, didn't we, about various things, but also how much we've loved doing this. And all our guests, and I was just thinking, we've had them from so many different places and sports and backgrounds, and from every single podcast there's a little bit that I take away and kind of remember afterwards. And particularly Z last week was just fantastic.
She sort of put us all to shame, didn't she? I've never known someone who, you know, I think I've mentioned before on this podcast, I've somehow mastered the art of procrastination during lockdown.
I don't believe that.
I'm a bit ashamed of myself, but yeah, I can really do a lot of faffing. But so the fact that she plays rugby, she's a mum of three, she's a critical care nurse, she raises money for charity, I was like, oh, okay, I need to get my butt in gear. So, but I think that's what I take away from every guest. You know, I'm always learning something new every week, something inspiring, something amazing, and that's why I love doing these podcasts so much.
What do you think of my new podcast wall, Annie? I'll explain to people what it is.
It's looking flash. It's looking grown up. It's looking very professional.
Well, you know what?
I'm not saying that you're not professional, but.
Where are we? We're 9 months in and I find it, because obviously I do loads of Zooms on breakfast, don't I? Or FaceTimes or whatever they are. And you see everybody's kind of like backgrounds. I've been absolutely fascinated. I was like, right, okay. In the latest lockdown, I'm like, okay, I'm going to sort out my background. So I've got, as you can see, various, my daughter did say, it's a bit of like a shrine to you, mummy. I'm like, yeah, it is. So it's got pictures of me, I don't know, on the BBC breakfast sofa, finishing Norseman, climbing up mountains there behind me. Can you see the sand dunes in Namibia? Anyway, beautiful. I just thought, Annie, finally I might get professional, because we've got a real professional on today who is absolutely fantastic presenter. I've been wanting to speak to her for ages, and she's literally sitting there looking very cool. Should we introduce her?
Yeah, very beautiful. Every single photograph I see of her, I'm like, oh, where's a bad one? I haven't seen one yet.
And she's kind of like, I guess we're sort of in the same space, aren't we? She's the wonderful Jackie Beltrao. And is that how I pronounce it properly, Jackie?
That is exactly how you pronounce it. Although most people get it wrong.
Oh,
well
excellent.
Done, Louise. Yeah, that's perfect.
Do they?
Yeah.
What do they say?
I've had hilarious ones. I've had Belgrano, Beltrano, Beltreo is the one that gets said the most, but I kind of go with that. Yesterday, my husband right. answered the door to a delivery guy, and he had a parcel for me, and he said, it's a parcel for Jackie Beltrao. And my husband went, oh my God, how do you know how to say my name? And he went, oh, because I'm from a town in Brazil called Francisco Beltrao. And Eduardo went, that's my granddad. Oh. He founded that town. And it was like, they had this big, long conversation. And the guy was like, wow. And Eduardo was like, wow. And then they just literally were there for half an hour. It was amazing. So he was from the town that my husband's granddad founded, because they were engineers. So they had a lot of towns named after them. So
that's so perfect. Adorable. Oh, well, I'm guessing because, Annie speaks much better Spanish than me, actually. But I learnt my Spanish in Latin America. And obviously that is not Portuguese, which, of course, or Brazilian. But I think probably that's where it's from. I say you're in the same space as me because you also present the same time of day that I do. You present the sports news on the other side.
We're a satellite channel, so it's not really the same as terrestrial. But yeah, we're up at the same time. It's really stupid time of the morning, which is sort of like the day nights. I don't know. I feel like I've lived in the twilight zone for most of my, you know, professional life, really. People say, did you see this that happened or that? I'm like, no, when did that happen? It happened at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, I was probably napping.
Yeah, we'll try not to do too much for the breakfast stuff, but Annie asked me what time. I just have to do the one thing everybody asks me, which is, what time do you get up?
What time do you get up? 3:45.
I'm much earlier than you. 3:40.
I usually snooze for 15 minutes as well.
And
my friend Charlotte, who works on Good Morning Britain, the other one, she went, oh my God, how many times do you press snooze? I went, about four. And she went, that's so bad. What about your husband? I went, he doesn't seem to mind. She goes, that is so selfish. You are selfish. I went, I know, but I just need the snooze.
I just think that if I hit the snooze button that many times, I'd probably feel 10 times worse. If I start doing that, then, I mean, like the question I've got to ask you girls as well is, you know, my face needs a bit of time to get going in the morning. Like, you know, by about two or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going, oh yeah, that's better. How do you both look so brilliant in the morning? There must be something. What are you doing?
Lights, makeup, lights. That's it.
Yeah. Are you doing your own makeup at the moment still, Jackie?
Yeah. I do it at home actually. Which is really bad because my eyes are always quite blurry in the morning and I feel like I've thrown it at my face and just, you know, just hope what sticks. And the worst thing is I've taken, I started sleeping with my hand on my forehead, my knuckles on my forehead. I don't know why. And I keep waking up with a hole in the middle of my head and it's like a huge dent that stays there all day. And this is really bad. And I don't know what makeup would cover that. Polyfiller, maybe.
I sometimes notice that Dan's, because Dan, he's got like a pillow mark like down his cheek and it seems to last for ages.
Yeah, a pillow crease. Yeah, I get those too. Yeah, it's dreadful.
No, they're not. But Jackie, you're a pro. I mean, you've been at Sky, correct me if I'm wrong, about 28 years, is it?
Yeah, and actually... we're in February, so this month is my anniversary of joining Sky, so it'll be 29 years. I forget the day, I need to look it up. It's something like the 14th. Yeah, 29 years.
And how did it all start? How did it all start? Tell us how it started there.
Oh, in a bizarre way that nobody ever in, you know, our industry would ever have the same way of joining the company. I was a gymnast, and when I gave up gymnastics, I did a bit of commentary for Eurosport, which was owned by Sky or B Sky B at the time, or BSB, I don't know, one of them owned it. And I loved commentating on gymnastics. And I did, you know, all weekends whenever I could. And I was in sports marketing as a job, and I joined Sky as a press officer. I was pretty young, but I was the press officer for Sky Sports. And I wrote the first press release when Sky bought the Premier League rights. So I wrote that press release. And it was like, you look at it now, it's like, my God, it was so cheap to buy football back in the day. But it was a fortune at the time. And when they sort of got up and running and all the reporters at Sky, you know, the football reporters went on their summer break, you know, people still had to have programmes put out. But everybody was on holiday at the same time because the football season ran, you know, when it ran, which was August to end of May. And they just used to say, oh, go and get that Jackie from the press office. We need someone to cover the fishing. Just, you know, she does gymnastics, fishing, similar. Just get her, she, you know, see if she wants to do it. And I really did want to do it. So I just covered a lot of, you know, really rubbishy events. But I enjoyed myself, fishing, skating, loads of things that none of the boys wanted to do because they were football reporters. And that was way beneath them. And they were on holiday. So that's how I kind of got my break in, you know, doing proper television. And it kind of went from there.
Just before, Annie, well, and we want to talk about the gymnastics. And I want to just sort of tell everybody who's listening to this podcast. I mean, there's so many reasons that we wanted to talk to you. It is about gymnastics. It's about what you're doing now. It's about the fact that you're absolutely fantastic. I love your yoga, by the way. And we should mention, because I want people, you know, to listen to all of this as well. You are going, at the moment, you've got cancer for the second time, haven't you?
It was weird in lockdown. I was kind of like on social media a lot, you know, telling people, you know, if you find something, you must go to the doctor, you must get a referral. Don't use COVID as an excuse not to go. And don't be scared to go to the hospital if they give you a referral, because cancer is much worse than COVID. Plus, you know, the cancer ward and the COVID ward, they're not the same. You'll be fine. And I was doing this a lot. And, you know, literally one day in the middle of lockdown, I just felt this tiny lump. And I was like, oh, my God, not again. This can't be happening to me again. And my friend Joanna, who's a breast nurse, she said, it doesn't really feel like anything. So I went to my surgeon. He checked her out. He said, this just feels like a piece of fatty tissue. It doesn't really feel like anything. But, you know, you know we're going to have it biopsied and you're going to have it scanned. The woman who did the scan, it was the most senior radiologist in the hospital, said, this just feels like a fatty deposit. It really doesn't feel like anything. And literally days later, the scan came back, the biopsy came back, and it was stage 3 breast cancer. It was very, very aggressive. And I did not expect that. My surgeon did not expect that. And the radiologist did not expect that. And I said to him, well, this is okay. You know, it's small. We can get rid of it. And he said, Jackie, this is very different to last time. It's so aggressive. We have to see if this has gone anywhere else. And then I just was on this big hole kind of mouse wheel of scans for the next 2 weeks to find out how bad it was. And it really was bad this time.
And you were pointing, people can't see you, but when you were starting that story, you're pointing to your collarbone, because it wasn't on your breast, was it? Was it near your collarbone?
Well, my breast had been removed 6 years ago when I had breast cancer the first time. So it sort of arrived just below my collarbone on a sort of quite bony part of my ribs. But that is still breast tissue, because your breast tissue goes all the way to your collarbone. So it obviously found a way to come back there, and then because it had no breast to go to, it then just went into my lymph nodes around my breast, around the back of the breast. And yeah, it was just a nightmare. It was like, how did this even happen from something so small? I mean, it was literally the size of a grain of rice. It's tiny. It was so tiny. And it's been something I've been trying to wrap my head around ever since, really. You know, beginning of June I found this out. And it just changes your whole view of life, because you literally have an axe hanging over your head, because, you know, the stats for this are not fantastic if you get secondary cancer of any kind. So you have to, you have to make a massive life adjustment. It's difficult.
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy, because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership, and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub, and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep, and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
And I think, you know, the message here, Jackie, is because I know you've sort of shared it very publicly in a great way, I think. I guess for yourself, in a way that, you know, for some people that they will find that quite cathartic. You have a really big fan base. But I guess it's a good message, because you had actually had a clear scan in the January, hadn't you? So the fact that you didn't ignore it, I guess, is so important. You know, that whole thing about practice, what we preach, you know, and a lot of people don't, but you absolutely did, and you got it dealt with quickly. I know it's hard because it is stage 3, but I'm guessing the fact that you jumped on it and all your team did as well gives you some good chance of some great treatment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not stage 3, it's stage 4. I mean, it literally is, you know, it is the worst it can be. It is the worst it can be. What I did was to just not be thinking all the time about I'm going to die soon, I'm going to die soon, I'm going to die soon, was I just read a lot of books. And as I was reading all these books, I came across women who'd been in a similar position to me, and they'd done a lot of stuff to help themselves. And it was all about, they didn't sort of deal with their illness, but they dealt with their wellness, if that makes sense. And they spent a lot of time concentrating on their wellness. And as they did that, they got better and their cancer went away. And I had this amazing message from a lady on Facebook. I don't really use Facebook that much, but I had all these messages, and I got them really late because I never use Facebook. And my husband went, "You've got all these messages from people." And I read them out, and I was reading through. And there's this one lady in Northwest Ireland called Annette. And she said, Jackie, you know, I've seen your story. She said, I just wanted to get in touch and tell you not to worry. You know, I was given a terrible diagnosis 25 years ago. I almost lost both my legs because of a tumor. And then when they realized the tumor had gone to my lungs, they told me I had 3 months to live. And she said, but I'm still here and I didn't die and I don't have cancer anymore. This is what I did. You will be fine. You will be like me. You will be fine. And she said, anytime you want to talk to me, I'm here. You know, I'll message you. And this is my telephone number. And I did speak to her. And it was a real eye-opener, actually. And yeah, she was my first, okay, this isn't the end. I can do something about this. No matter what the statistics say, you know, that's the law of averages. And as far as I'm concerned, I've never been average. So I kind of hung on to that, really.
Gosh, there's so much to talk to you about. I love something you said, I think it was this week, talking about, was it World Cancer Awareness Day this week? And you said, prepare for the best, expect the best.
Yeah, because I was in the radio, I was listening to radio the other day and I was coming back from oxygen therapy, which is one of these alternative treatments that I do. And I was listening to Greg James. I'm always listening to Radio 1 because I'm like that down with the kids. And he was trying to, I don't know.
I listen to Radio 1. Because
I want to know what's, you know. It's so embarrassing, isn't it? I want to know all the songs. And I want to be able to sing them. And he was trying to get this phrase out, which, of course, like the old saying is, what is it? It's prepare for the worst, hope for the best. Oh, he couldn't get it right. He kept getting it wrong. He goes, what is it? What is it? And he kept getting it wrong. Eventually, you know, someone told him what it was. And I just thought, that's a shocking way to live your life, prepare for the worst. I am definitely not doing that. I'm going to assume and prepare for the best that I'm going to be okay. And I'm going to be okay because I'm doing XYZ, you know, backup treatments, and I'm looking after myself well, and I am well. I'm like the fittest I've been in years and the wellest I've been in years. And that's got to count for something in the end.
Absolutely.
So prepare for the best and hope for the best.
And I've noticed that you chat with Deborah James, Belle Babe, who's been a guest, who's a good friend of mine, and Louise. I say good friend. We spent quite a lot of time together getting her through a triathlon, which is now nearly 2 years ago, Lou. Can you believe it? And, you know, her prognosis was not good and she's still here and she is living the most amazing life. You know, if I want cheering up, I go to her Instagram page and just, you know, and I guess, you know, You're here, so you've got to keep fighting and you've got to live the best life you can live. And, you know, I've loved watching all your stuff on Twitter and your yoga. And I'm thinking, God, I need a bit of that. I really do.
I speak to her a lot, you know, because I just at the beginning, I was like, oh, how do you wrap your head around something that, you know, the law of averages says you'll be dead in 2 years? You know, I've got so much that I want to do. You know, my mum died really young, not of breast cancer, of a heart condition. And, you know, always one of my ambitions in life, and like a really, really big ambition, is to be a grandma. That was just one of the things that I thought, I'm going to do that. That's going to be the one thing that I never had, you know, for my children, is that I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there for their children. I'm going to be fit and I'm going to be healthy and I'm going to be helpful when my children have kids. And then suddenly you get this diagnosis. It's like, oh, bloody hell. Really? Are you having a laugh? But that sort of drives me on. And a lot of people I've spoken to who, you know, deal with secondary cancer, all different kinds. And, you know, Deb's got bowel cancer, I've got breast cancer. But ultimately it's the same if you've got secondaries. Is you've got to plan your future. You've got to focus on things that you want in the future. And don't be as scared because it's the future. You have to be always thinking, okay, I want this, I'm going to do this. I want to go to Australia and see all my friends, you know, whether that's next year or the year after, I'm definitely going to do that. And you've got to visualize that you are going to do all those things. And you have to visualize, I am going to be a grandma one day and I am still going to be here for my kids' weddings and all of that. And you have to, yeah, you have to plan for that. Because if you don't, you drive yourself mad, to be honest.
I just want to, because you first had breast cancer, was it six years ago now? Is that how long ago it was, Jackie? Was it longer?
It's nearly seven. I can't remember. It's 2013 I was diagnosed. So yeah, Christmas 2013.
I mean, there's so much to unpick really with that, isn't there? For me, I mean, you are a shining beacon of light because you know, to go through that and get through it like you are, but also in some ways to do this ridiculous, ridiculous job that we do where we get up at crazy o'clock in the morning. And then, you know, I don't know how you feel about it, but I kind of like put on the war paint and that is a version of me, but it's kind of like a different version of me. And to kind of, you know, it takes a lot for me in some ways to sort of pull that off. So to pull that off and also be not well is just, for me, really admirable, actually.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Louise. Yeah, but it's also normal for me, you know, like it is for you to get up at stupid o'clock and get made up and, you know, pick whatever clothes you're going to wear. And that's normal. And think about, you know, what stories I'm going to do. And I, you know, I've just finished editing an interview that I did, you know, for tomorrow about Fran Jones. I think you had her on your show as well, the tennis player.
I'm going to try and get her on the podcast, actually. She's fantastic, isn't she? Tell us a little bit about her.
Yeah, so she's a British tennis player. She's very young, she's 20. She's qualified for the Australian Open by winning 3 matches, which not many Brits managed to do, but she's done it. But her story is remarkable because she's only got 3 fingers on each hand and a thumb, and she's only got 3 toes on 1 foot and 4 toes on the other foot. So her balance is not the same as everybody else's. And she's been told by doctors all her life that she will not be a pro tennis player. There is no way she will be able to do this as a career. And yet here she is. And she's in the draw for the Australian Open, which starts, you know, next week. And she's going to be playing, and she's proved everybody wrong. And she has total belief in herself, and she's just not interested in hearing what, you know, doctors have to say about the things she can't do. All she's interested in is what she can do. So more of that attitude, I think, is kind of would serve everybody better, really.
Yeah, and I think you're so right.
And that's kind of the attitude I'm going with.
Yeah, and I'm being a bit stupid, really, because, of course, you know, to me, my job is so much part of my identity that would, you know, if I wasn't able to do that, then that would be make things more difficult, actually.
It really would. And I didn't take any time off for that reason when I was doing chemo this time. And I was doing a chemo week for 12 weeks in lockdown, which finished in September. And I wanted to work all the way through because I thought, well, at least I've got that to look forward to at weekends, because I do Friday, Saturday, Sunday. At least I have that bit of normality in my life when everything else is so weird and so not normal and so scary. And at least that's one thing that was, you know, was familiar and not changed by what, you know, what I was going through. And I think also, this isn't why I did it, by the way. It wasn't to be a hero or anything. It was just that a sort of sidebar to it was that if I'm standing there and I'm going through chemo and I'm working and I look fine and, you know, and despite everything that's going on, then other people who are going through the same, it might give them a bit of hope that actually it's not the end of the world. Okay, I've been diagnosed. Okay, I've got chemo. Well, look at her. So she, and she looks completely normal and fine. That helps, I think, that helps a lot of people.
That's a very, very powerful message, Jackie.
Yeah, it's a powerful message. And it wasn't what I intended, but it's kind of what happened.
So let's go back a little bit, Jackie, because prior to working for Sky, you, as you've mentioned, were a gymnast, but you weren't just a regular gymnast. You are also an Olympian. 1984, was it? LA Games?
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get really, you know, a tougher sport. I mean, in terms of the training, it's pretty brutal on a young body.
I was a rhythmic gymnast, and it was the first year that rhythmic gymnastics had been, you know, in the games. And, you know, and I loved it as a sport. My gym club didn't really have the facilities to be, you know, your regular gymnastics club. They didn't have the space, and they didn't have the kit. So when rhythmic gymnastics came along, it was perfect, and it was perfect for my coach as well. And, you know, I loved it. And it was the first year that it was in the games, and you had to qualify. You had to qualify at the World Championships, and you had to become in the top 50 in the world to qualify. And 3 of us went out to try and qualify to the World Championships. And I was in a bit of a sort of blur at the time because, you know, back in the day, we didn't train every day. We also had to go to school, and we had to try and get our A levels and O levels. And my dad, you know, he just wanted me to go to university because nobody in my family had ever been. And he wanted me to be the first one to go to uni. And he said, well, you know, I will take you to training if you promise me you'll do all the work for school. I'm like, okay, fine deal. But before the World Championships happened, my mum died. And I was 18, and she literally just died on the living room floor. And I was away on a training weekend, and they had to bring me back. And it was just awful. And then 3 weeks later, I was at this big competition trying to qualify for the Olympics. And obviously I was heartbroken. And but I suppose, again, the normality of me competing, which is what I did every weekend, all the time, traveling around Europe, the normality of that got me through that terrible time in my life, and qualified me for the Olympics and got my space, you know, in Los Angeles. And I think it was when I got to Los Angeles that I slightly fell apart and I didn't have a very good competition. And I suppose, you know, it was back before people gave you counseling or anything like that. And you just had to sort of pull yourself together and get through stuff. You know, it was the '80s. No one really cared. And that's what I did. But in the Olympics, I had a terrible, terrible competition. I really, really fell apart. But my achievement, I suppose, was getting there. And I always thought it was quite a big thing. You know, my dad thought it was a big thing, and everyone was really proud of me in my church. You know, they were, you know, they gave, at the end of Mass one day, they gave me a big kind of send off. And anyway, when I found the Olympic certificate in my dad's house when he died, and I took it and I put it up in my loo, in my downstairs loo. And it's a really lovely certificate. It just says, "Congratulations, Jacqueline Levy," because that's my name then, "on your participation in the Los Angeles Olympics, California, 1984. And really lovely, lovely, lovely. My daughter saw it. She was about 9, and she saw it. She came running out of the loo and she went, "Oh my God, mummy, 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 I can't believe you've been to California." "Yeah, you've been to California. That's where they make Hannah Montana." And I went, "Yeah, that's not the point of it. The point of it is I went to the Olympics." And she went, "Oh yeah, but you know everyone who goes to the Olympics. Everyone you know has gone to the Olympics." I went, "No, they don't. Is it because I work in sport and I interview them? No one really goes to the Olympics." She went, "Yeah, but Hannah Montana, that's where she lives." I went, "Oh, okay. I give up.
Don't you love them? You've got to love kids, haven't you? The things they come out. They keep it real, don't they, at the end of the day? I mean, Olympics, what's that? You've been to California, Mum?
Gabby Logan's daughter said to her when she was about 9, she went, "Mum, when I'm older, I'm signing up for the Olympics." And Gabby was like, "Sign up for the Olympics." She goes, "What?
As if you could just sign up."
"And sign up." She went, "No."
Oh, gosh. So you were 18 when you did that.
Yeah.
And then did you stop after that?
No, I carried on. And I went to uni and did a sports science degree. And I was carrying on competing. And I was doing a lot of internationals and traveling. And, I was British number one at this point. But it sort of got to my third year of uni. And I just thought, I'm done. I had a really good competition at Wembley against some Russians, and I'd done really well. And I just thought, I'm never going to top that. I'm done. I'm just going to try and enjoy my last year and have a normal life for a change, where I'm not rushing off on a Saturday morning with a hangover to training, where I'm going to be training like for 8 hours and then 8 hours on the Sunday as well. Maybe I should just call it a day.
You have, for someone who loves sports, you must have interviewed some pretty amazing sports people. So my question is, who is your most favourite person that you've ever interviewed?
That's a difficult one.
I always throw those ones. I don't mean to.
Well, I do like covering Wimbledon. I think I've covered maybe, I want to say, 18 Wimbledons for Sky. You know, I've done a lot of good preview stuff. But in terms of the most interesting people to interview, in that they give you good answers that are well thought through, Andy Murray is good. Serena Williams is good if you compliment her on her hair first. They're just interesting people, because they don't care, you know, whether I like them or not. They just answer the question. Andy Murray always gives really thoughtful answers, but you think they're boring because his voice is monotone. Roger Federer's good, because you literally were given one question to ask, because we're not rights holders, and he will talk for 2 minutes anyway, so you pretty much have a complete interview. And I love Rafa Nadal, because he's just really normal and sweet and down to earth. I had a really nice interview with Andre Agassi once when his book came out, and he was very cool, because I was there the day he retired and he was crying at the US Open. I was in the corridor because I was working on it as a reporter. We were in New York when his book came out. It was great to actually talk to him about his life and you know, how he hated tennis, really. And then he just turned around in the middle of the interview and went, "Do you have any ideas what I can buy my wife for Christmas?" And I went, "Steffi." And he went, "She is so hard to buy for." I went, "Oh, shoes. I always like shoes." He went, "No, she has size 10 feet. Shoes are not a thing." I went, "Jewelry? No, she doesn't like jewelry. She hates jewelry." I'm like, "Makeup?" She went, "No, she doesn't wear makeup, not makeup." I was like, oh, I don't know. You don't want clothes, shoes, makeup or jewellery. You're a bit stuffed, Andre. I went, what do you do in the week? He said, well, you know, we like to cook and we like to go out for meals. And I went, oh, you need a Nigella book. Who's Nigella? She's a cook, but her recipes are really good. He went, oh, right. So he writes it down. So I think that's what Steffi Graf got for Christmas, the Nigella.
There's nothing wrong with the Nigella. Do you know what? My this is completely off the point, but my husband bought me lots of lovely presents for Christmas. And the only one I complained to him about it because I bought it this week was I wanted Jamie's book, you know, Seven, but whatever it's called. It's seven ingredients for everything. And I was like, and I cooked something last night. I cooked some salmon sort of sashimi. And he said, oh, that's really delicious. So I was like, yeah, it's from the Christmas present you didn't buy me. I mean, you know, how ungrateful for what I really want.
It's because they don't listen. They just don't listen. They sort of hear half of it and go, cookbook. Yeah. Oh, I'll randomly pick a cookbook. Yeah, the key information was in the rest of the sentence.
You're quite into your sort of really healthy food. I know, Annie, you've been looking at her Instagram, haven't you, or her Twitter. So tell us about nutrition, Jackie.
Well, again, I read loads of books when I was diagnosed. When I was diagnosed the first time, I read one book by Jane Plant, who'd overcome breast cancer six times. So I read her book and literally her message was give up dairy. You know, there's too many hormones in it. It's too many hormones that breast cancer likes. So, you know, don't eat dairy. So I gave up dairy 7 years ago and I haven't eaten it since, except I have on Christmas and Easter and on my birthday, I pick a chocolate bar that I've missed and then I have it on those days. So
what are they?
Rolos. But this year I couldn't find any Rolos. So it was a Toffee Crisp, which my son said was a complete waste of a choice. And I said, no. It was delicious. It was delicious. Yeah. So I always, on buttons, actually. Buttons at Easter, chocolate buttons. So I gave up dairy. So this time I was going to have to be more strict. And all the books I read, you know, dictated really that you really need to take control of your diet. And sugar seemed to be the big no-no. So I gave up sugar, which was really hard, really hard, because I love biscuits. And I don't know about you, when you work early in the morning, I just love like a rich tea biscuit with a cup of tea to kind of wake me up. And, you know, I don't think that's really that bad, but apparently sugar is really bad. If you've got cancer, it's really bad because cancer uses sugar to replicate. So I went on a keto diet, which is, I think, the most miserable 3 months of my life, not being able to have a potato or any rice or a piece of bread or any of it. And I lost so much weight. And at the end of it, the doctor said, you know, you need to introduce some carbs into your diet. So I have a little bit of carb now. I have oats for breakfast and oat cakes for lunch, and you know, I might have half a baked potato for dinner, and I'll have maybe some, if the kids haven't pasta, I might occasionally have some gluten-free pasta. But I'm pretty strict about what I eat. If anything turns to sugar, you know, I try not to eat it, really. My diet's a lot duller than it used to be. But, you know, on the upside, I am the size I was when I was a gymnast. I guess I was eating a lot of rubbish because that was the extra stone. It was just sugar. No, and I also do a green juice every day, which is usually fennel, celery, ginger, fresh turmeric. I sometimes chuck in a bit of cooking apple or a carrot or some beetroot. And I have that at breakfast and I have one at lunch. And I use that I take 10,000 supplements. So
10,000?
No, it's not 10,000.
Like actual 10,000?
No, but it is.
My gosh, how did you eat them all?
But it's about 60 a day. And I've managed to split it up into three lots, although there's an evening lot before bed, which is, I don't count those. So I split it up into three lots. But the morning one is about, I would say it's at least 30 pieces in there. And my kids would go, how many do you think you can stuff in your mouth at once? And I was kind of up to about five. And I said to Georgie, how many do you think I can do? And he goes, I reckon you can do 10. And I can. I can take 10 supplements and swallow it down. If I take a big enough glug of the horrible green juice, I can take 10 supplements. So yeah.
How does the green juice taste? Sounds disgusting.
Well, it tastes really nice until I put the final ingredient in, which is another thing I've started taking, which is wheatgrass. And wheatgrass tastes disgusting. It tastes.
Is that the green stuff I saw in a packet?
And it arrives at my house frozen. And I defrost it and I put it in. And it's really good for you. It's very good for your blood. And that tastes absolutely I don't think I've ever tasted anything worse apart from Tibetan herbs. Disgusting. It tastes like eating like grass, but worse. So I stuff that in, and that ruins the taste somewhat, which is, I just down it. It's just something to endure and get through.
Well, you'll be glad to know, Jackie, that today, because of you, I didn't buy my cream egg and I bought some wasabi peas instead.
Very good.
I was chatting with Louise yesterday. We were having a little chat about you. We were chatting about your diet and giving up sugar and stuff that I'd read about. And I know sugar is completely, you know, crap. I know it is anyway. And I eat way too much. So Louise and I were discussing this and I was telling her about my naughty sugar habit. And then I just suddenly thought, saying, I've got to crack it. I've got to crack it. So
Annie, you've got to tell Jackie and everybody listening to this podcast what your sugar habit is. Come on.
No, Louise, the reason I can't is because my husband's going to listen to this podcast.
Oh, he listens.
What is the sugar habit?
I'll tell you, Jackie.
It's quite a lot of cream eggs. Most time I go to
Coca-Cola.
Coke.
Cream eggs. What else?
Bar of chocolate.
He's now listening, by the way. Hi, Timmy.
It's nothing that he hasn't heard of before, you know, and so I'm going to really try, and you know, and you're going to motivate me. I'm going to come on, you know, on the trip with you of no sugar, because you know, whatever, you know, it's not good for you, is it, at any stage in your life? So that's, you know, so you've spurred me on to give up sugar. So
wasabi
peas today. I know, and a cream egg. There's nothing like a cream egg. I know they're not everyone's favorite.
Do you know what I miss the most? It's I miss rich tea biscuits massively. I mean, you know, if I could recreate a sugar-free one, I'm on it, but I'm sure it would taste awful. But what I really miss is crisps. I mean, I'm just such a snacker.
Oh,
I mean,
you not eat crisps?
Well, they turn to sugar, you know, it's potato, and you know, the fat they're fried in is not great either. But I've sort of started eating a few, you know, but I try and really limit the number of pieces I eat. But crisps, I miss so much. Really miss crisps.
I would miss crisps more. We've had this conversation before, haven't we? I'm a crisp person as well. What about, so no alcohol as well?
Well, that was a thing as well for a while. And then I just thought, oh God, this is my life. You know, what if my life's short and I've spent it all in denial of everything? So I've kind of reintroduced a little bit of red wine. So yeah, red wine on a Sunday.
Oh, because you finish work, don't you, on Sunday? Do you work Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Morning?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, but I mean, I'd be happily sinking half a bottle of red wine, you know, with a friend or my sister, or, you know, my husband's not much of a drinker, so he's not much company for drinking because he falls asleep. But I would, cocktails or whatever, you know, I was there, but I don't know, I've got the brakes on at the moment. So I don't go mad. I don't go mad.
Tell us a little bit about family life, because you're married, you mentioned Eduardo. And he's from Brazil, as we mentioned.
Yeah, so he's insane. Everyone at work always says, oh, poor Eduardo. How are you still married? Because everybody knows that. I'm not a diva, but I've got a short temper and, you know, I like things just so. And I'm very fussy about things like food and drink and what my house looks like. And I'm very, very picky. Yeah, anyway, he's still around, so that's good. So I can't be that bad. And my kids, I've got Amelia, who's 20. Do you know what? I've forgotten how old she is. She's either 22 or 23. I think it's 22. And she's just finished her journalism qualifications and trying to find the next step, which is impossible in lockdown. Just impossible. And then Tiago's at Leeds doing fine art. He's 19. Or is he 20? I get confused. And then my youngest is 10 months younger. That's why I get confused, because I had two in a year. So I never know how old they are.
They call them Irish twins, don't they?
Yeah.
Though, when you have
two
in a year.
Yeah, 2 weeks of the year, they're the same age. So Georgie's either 18 or 19. I think 18. No, I think 19. And he's on a gap year. He's just, he's the brain of Britain. And he's on a gap year, waiting to hear what university he's got. So yeah, it's a good year to have a gap year and not be there, but also a bad year because you can't go traveling or anything.
Mm.
So he's doing another A-level, which is incredibly nerdy, but hats off.
Oh wow, another one, gosh.
Yeah, but it's great actually, because it has happened, and then suddenly you're all thrust together, and my son who was at uni is back, and you know, it's just really nice. And you know, even though lockdown is awful and boring and all the rest of it, you know, we'll never get this time again, you know, with teenage children who actually want to hang out with you and eat meals around the table all together. You know, it's never going to happen again. I was kind of grateful for that.
You intimated there, you know, for the, with your, what you're going through, that's kind of reassuring having them around, presumably.
Yeah, and they all wanted to pitch in and take me to treatments, and but you know, because of lockdown, you can't really take anybody. It's been horrible in that regard because they all wanted to do their bit, and you know, they were prevented because of protocols.
Jackie, I'm just going back to I want to go back to Eduardo, and it was funny something you said there about being a bit of a diva and hot-tempered and stuff. But I know, so you spent quite a lot of time in Brazil, haven't you? So you've got a second home in Rio de Janeiro.
No, that's a bit of a lie. My mother-in-law lives in Rio, so we that's our holiday home. We go to her house. We love Rio. I love it there. It just feels like home to me.
You know, maybe you have a touch of Brazilian in you anyway, because when I think of sort of like Brazilian women, I've spent a couple of times in Brazil, and yeah, they're quite feisty, aren't they? So that's probably why, you know, Eduardo is able to get on with you and have no problem, because like the Brazilian women, what they want, they kind of get in a really good way, in a strong, you know, in a strong way.
He's very laid back. I mean, he's got that whole, you know, what's time? Why do we need to be somewhere on time? And I'm always on time for everything. And he, you know, he just isn't. So, I mean, that used to drive me nuts, but I'm kind of used to it now. But I, you know, I'm Irish. I'm Irish born. My parents were Irish. My grandparents were Irish. My great grandparents were Irish. And that, you know, Irish people they're feisty. Celtic people are very feisty. And that's just how I am. I can't change that. So he has to like it, we'll lump it.
Oh, that was the word I think I was looking for, feisty.
Feisty, yeah. Life's too short to be sticking around like listening to idiots and things. Why don't you just tell them they're idiots?
Let's talk about the gymnastics and how that... I mean, so I watched your yoga stuff, and for starters, I'm like, how does she do that? But of course you can do that because you're a gymnast, but you're still really passionate about sort of exercise and sport, aren't you?
Yeah, I've always, you know, kept myself in shape. And I think mainly that's kind of... a bit of Catholic guilt left over from the gymnastics days, because you know, you live such a disciplined life, like all of your life, how can you just drop that? You can't. So I've always done something. I've always either gone to the gym or I've gone for a run. I mean, I'm not much of a runner. I kind of do 5k happily, but I wouldn't really probably do much more than that. But the yoga thing was something that I picked up, and at first I did it for not yogic reasons. I did it because it was like gymnastics and I could do the moves and I enjoyed kind of moving in that way. But when you kind of, you know, dig down into yoga, that's not what it's about. It's more about the mind and going inside yourself and living in the moment and, you know, enjoying the movement for just the movement. And that's really helped me in, you know, in this time when, you know, living in the moment is all you've got, really. So I've kind of appreciated yoga much more in these last few months because, you know, it's helped me a lot to have that mindset and to have that, you know, that slow breathing. And you know, my yoga teacher, she's so laid back, Trish, and she always says, Jackie, the move isn't the yoga. The yoga is the relaxation you do after you've done the move that's taking it all out of you. I'm like, really? She said, yeah, the yoga is the feeling it gives you once you've done the move. The yoga is not the move, which is what I'd always got wrong. But I still like the moves. And I wasn't running for ages. My chemo, I was just made me too tired. So I didn't really run. And then I was doing some podcasts for a hospital. And one of the people we spoke to was a guy who was given a terminal diagnosis 5 or 6 years ago. He had prostate cancer. And he was a pretty young guy. But he decided that, you know, he wasn't going to give into it. And he just started running. And he just ran marathon after marathon after marathon. And raised a ton of money for prostate cancer. And he ran all the way through chemo and he just inspired me. I just thought, oh, you're so lazy. Why aren't you running again? So I just went out and started running again the next day. And I kind of run most days now. And I love it. I love that feeling of being out in nature. And the day when it snowed, was it last weekend or the weekend before? And I started my run, it wasn't snowing.
I saw your pictures.
Oh,
it looked amazing.
God, it was just so nice to be running in that, and it just felt really special. And I was in two minds because I've just finished my shift and I thought, I'm really tired, shall I go to bed, shall I run, shall I go to bed? And I picked run, and I was so happy that I did because it started snowing halfway through, and it just felt magical. And it's weird when you're in my situation, things like that do feel magical. You just think, I'm so glad I experienced it and didn't go to bed, because if I'd gone to bed, I wouldn't have seen it.
Didn't you do a run that day, Annie, as well? A mega snowy run by mistake.
I did. I have run a lot in my life, Jackie, but I wouldn't say that I'm sort of Annie fit at the moment, but I'm sort of running, you know, but I've got a really good friend down the road who's a great runner, and he's 6'7" and he's one of those northern types that, well, he is, he's from up north, but he's been down south for a long time, but he hasn't lost any of the hardiness. And I saw it starting to snow and I thought, if I ring Roger and say I'm not coming, he's going to think I'm really wet. So I just thought, no, right, get out there. And we left the house and there was no snow. And by the time we came home, because we went out for about 13, 14 miles or something silly like that, the whole place, you saw the picture, didn't you, Louise? It was just, we'd had this, you know, complete dump of snow. And we ran on all the roads. They were dead. There was no one on the road. Yeah. It was just like you said, Jackie, you know, it was so magical. And I think, you know, that message about just getting out there and doing it, because it is easy to go, oh, can't be bothered, you know, but we know how brilliant, you know, we feel. And imagine if you hadn't done that run in the snow, you know, what a shame, you'd have missed out on all those endorphins and all those like happy feelings you get.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, what's changed my running is earpods, actually, or AirPods, or I don't know what they're called, but the fact that the music...
Call them earpods.
Yeah, earpods. AirPods. Yeah, they've changed my running because the music is so clear and I don't have... I've got a funny ear, I think. Before, the earphones would just fall out. They'd always fall out of one of my ears. And it's like, for God's sake, this is so annoying when I was running. And now they don't fall out. So it's like, it's music all the way. I'm like, oh, thank God, this is brilliant.
I'm going to ask you, we'll let you go in a minute because you've got who's cooking dinner tonight? Do you have to cook tonight or somebody else cook?
I think Amelia might be cooking tonight. I don't think it's my turn.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, I think it's been my turn every day this week. I've done four dinners. I think it's my time for a night off.
I want to chat with you about Amelia because she does look absolutely lovely and she's kind of right by your side. And whilst you're still very much your mum, from what I can kind of see, you've become, you know, pretty good mates and she does seem like, you know, an amazing support to you.
She is. She's very feisty as well. I mean, she's like so her mother's daughter. We're all a bit scared of Amelia. So whatever Amelia says goes, we're like, ooh, okay. But she's been amazing because she's very, whatever she thinks in private, she never kind of reveals, how upset she was by the news and everything, which she was upset. But she, you know, she's very practical and she really was like, come on, Mom, come on, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. You know, she's very much of that ilk, you know, she's very no nonsense. So there's no wallowing in self-pity because she's just not having it. And I was so, and she was so great, you know, during the chemo, you know, she'd just drive me there and, you know, I was completely out of it at the end of it and she'd like make sure I got home. And yeah, she was just brilliant. She's such a good girl. And she's so beautiful.
Takes after her mama, that's why.
No, she's much more beautiful than me. I mean, she's stunning. She's absolutely stunning.
That's the funny thing about having daughters, isn't it? I sometimes walk down the street and people like turn around and staring at them. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I was going to ask you, I won't ask you on here the question I was going to ask you because your employers might be. Well, I'll say what it is. You don't have to answer. The question was, because I get asked this a lot as well. So, you know, what are you going to do next, Louise? Where are you going to go work next? To which I always reply, I love this job. I wouldn't get up at 3:40 in the morning. And you talked, didn't you, right at the beginning of this podcast about having things you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So what's on the bucket list?
God. Well, one of the things was actually...
Being
a granny at some point, not now or, you know, this year.
No pressure, Amelia.
She hasn't even got a boyfriend at the moment, so that's really not on the card. And we're in lockdown, so she's got no chance of getting one either.
Obviously.
That was one of my things. Bizarrely, I love renovating houses, and I'm really good at it. And I, you know, just say that myself. And I've just lived it. Usually, when my house needs redecorating, I move rather than redecorate. So we've been in this house the longest we've been in any house, which I think is, I want to say 8 years. That's the longest we've lived in any house because I always find another one to buy. And we have to go then and live in an absolute shithole because it literally we live in it while we do it. And the kids are all in one room on air mattresses and it's holes in the roof, holes at the back, everything. But I've got my eye on a property and I would sell this tomorrow, this house, and do it all again because I like the creative process of it. Plus the fact, you know, you're kind of more loaded at the end of it when you've moved into an absolute hellhole and lived through it for a year. So I would do that would be on my list of things to do, which is a big thing to do if you're in my situation, because you have to be able to be sure you can get to the end of the project. I've never been to Australia, and I have a whole bunch of friends all in Australia who I'd love to go to Australia, and that's definitely on my list of things to do, you know, when we can travel again. What else? I don't know. There were the three things I thought of. There's nothing I'm burning to do. I put a post up on my social media when I got my scan results, which were pretty good. They weren't like excellent, but they were good. And I was doing like a little dance, and I put some Strictly music on it. And that would be on my bucket list. I would love to do Strictly. I love dancing. I'm not very good at it, but I do love it. So I did this little Charleston dance. And then one of the people on my social media went, "Oh my God, she's so old." Like, that was the whole point of the post. I mean, that was nothing to do with the post. I mean, you totally missed the point there. How thick are you? Yeah. "Oh my God, she's so old. Oh no, this bird is so old. This bird is so old."
Jackie, you need to have, you know, a little, or rather Louise needs to have a little chit chat with you, because she often tells me off for sort of, you know, being on Twitter and telling me off and, you know, getting upset when, you know, you do get some pretty vile people out there. And, you know, so you need a little pep talk from Louise. She'll sort you out.
I wasn't upset. I thought it was funny because it was just so... it was so random and so off point.
That's the point about social media, isn't it? It's, you know, it's not the real world. You know, it can be brilliant for some stuff, and it can be absolutely vile.
But then, you know, when you're in my position, you actually, those things would really upset me before. There are so many things now I just think, I actually don't care. I really don't care. You know, I always used to worry about if I'd said something slightly wrong on air or made a joke maybe that I shouldn't have done, I'd be like, "Oh God, I hope the bosses don't go mad at me for that." And now I go, what's the worst that can happen? I don't actually care. I'm just being myself. Do you know what I mean? It's quite empowering to be in my position in some ways.
That's the beauty. You know, sort of just here, yeah, parking up, you know, cancer. That's the beauty about sort of being a confident, you know, woman in her 50s, and, you know, you back yourself. And when you're talking, you don't remind me in terms of how you speak or how you look, but Naga Manchetti, I love, because she backs herself. Yeah. And she says, "You know what? I'm happy with who I am. If people don't like it, you know, stuff it."
And you know what? Women need to learn that quicker. I mean, that's what I just said. I say to my daughter all the time, know your worth. Don't sit there and think, "I'm worth less than him," or "I'm worth less than her." You know, I know my worth. I know the quality of my work is good. And I know when I've done good work. And if you don't appreciate it, because I'm 55 and not 35, that's your problem.
Definitely.
Brilliant. I think we should let you go, because we've been chatting for so long, and I've loved it, by the way. Any kind of top tips for people? Because, you know, these are hard times. You are particularly in a difficult place. Any kind of top tips for people who are listening? And I know so many of... we've got really loyal listeners. It's so lovely, Jackie. They're fantastic, I know. Any top tips, you know, kind of whether it's about nutrition or, you know, the power of exercise, any top tips to kind of get us through the next, whatever it might be, few weeks?
I never make New Year's resolutions, because I always think I can never ever stick to them. So what's the point? So don't deprive yourself of everything. But, you know, if you are someone who eats lots of sugar, maybe try swapping out all of your white carbs for brown carbs initially. You know, maybe give up, if you're doing three biscuits a day with your tea, maybe just have them once a day. You know, try and cut down the sugar, and you will feel a lot more bizarrely energetic by giving up sugar, even though you always think the opposite is true. It's not true. Eat nuts instead. Do some exercise every day. Maybe have one day off, but if you can do a little bit of exercise every day. And if you can't do any, just run up and down the stairs. I do 15 times up and down the stairs if I just think, "Oh, I haven't done anything. And I've just eaten a big fat meal. Okay, I'll just do 15 times up and down the stairs," which is my dad's always his very good way of training, was stair runs. So you could do that even if it was raining and you didn't want to go out. Get a dog is also my other top tip for everything. I've got three dogs, and I just think, you know, just get you through lockdown, get you out walking, fresh air. A dog is just such an incredible gift. And they have got me through some tough times, my dogs, because they don't understand. So it's fine. They just want to love you and go for walks and eat food.
That's such a lovely way to leave it. And I couldn't agree with you more about the dogs. Our dogs have been, in this last lockdown, a godsend, just doesn't even touch the sides. Oh, they've been brilliant.
They're just beautiful gifts from God, dogs. And yeah, they're lovely. They're lovely.
And you know what, Jackie? I think sometimes they do understand. I think they, you know, dogs can be incredibly intelligent sometimes. You know, they definitely have a different sense to humans, I think.
We've got a really bad habit, Annie, of we realised that one of our dogs, if you pretend to cry, she jumps on you and you give her big kisses. So if you need a hug, you just go, she comes. Oh, it's so mean because we're sort of, you know, we're playing with her, but it's so sweet. Oh, Jackie Beltrão, you've been just a wonderful guest. Thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck as well with, you know, your ongoing, your treatment and everything you have to go through. I think it's wonderful to talk to you, isn't it, Annie?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. And I just think, you know, I know it's thrown around a lot at the moment, that word inspiring, inspirational, but you are, because, you know, listen, you know, shit happens, right? And we have to learn how to deal with it. And I guess none of us, you know, I'm always really aware of that, you know, some people, I have friends that just go through life quite oblivious, but I really believe we don't know what's around the corner. And, you know, kind of, it's, you know, it's real cliche, live every day as if it was your last. But, you know, I think, you know, I always say everyone is allowed a crap day. We're all allowed a crap day, but we need to pick ourselves up after that and get on with it. Because whilst you're here and breathing and you have a family and a roof over your head and food in the fridge, and hopefully in my case, lots of wine and in yours on a Sunday, you've got to crack on with it and make it the best you can.
The one thing I've learned in this whole time, and it's maybe the message that it was, you know, cancer was given to me for, because I never learned it until now, is to be grateful, you know, to be grateful for all the things that you have, even if there are other things that you want and you don't have. Just be grateful for what you do have, you know, my lovely husband, my lovely children, like you said, you know, my house, my garden. I'm grateful I've got a garden when so many people in this situation don't have a garden. And just be more appreciative of your life. You know, I've got a job. It's not only about what you'd like, but just appreciate what you have. And that's an important message. And it's amazing how much better you feel once you take that message on board.
Jackie, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes, thank you, Jackie.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, girls. It was lovely chatting to you. I don't know why anyone would find my story interesting, but...
Well, they do.
They do. It's a great story, Jackie, and you're amazing.
You are welcome.
Annie, we're up to nearly 150,000 downloads. How many were we aiming for?
We were aiming for about 10,000, Louise. I mean, it is so exciting. It really is. And I'm just so happy that people want to listen to us and we get such lovely reviews. And so it's a really big thank you, an opportunity to say thanks to everyone who's tuning in. And the amazing thing is last week when we have the brilliant Zion, our lovely black Muslim rugby player, all the boys in my village who are Barnes Rugby Boys vets, they all listened. And so I put something out on the sort of the WhatsApp that we have saying, listen, guys, you know, thanks for flagging this one up. She was brilliant. And they went, no, we've already listened. So that was amazing. So lots of lovely middle-aged men listening to the Her Spirit podcast. And why not? They won't mind me calling them that.
No, welcome to you all. And also, thank you so much for listening, by the way, everybody. And if you've got any suggestions for guests that you'd like us to talk to, please do let us know. It's Feet First February, isn't it, Annie? Obviously, my feet are not going very far in running, but I am walking every day with said dogs.
Brilliant. Yeah, me too. I'm running every day and planning on doing a marathon at the end of Feb.
Are you?
Well, 14 miles on Saturday. On Sunday, I'm going to run, nudge it up a few more the following week, and then a marathon the week after. Why not?
Have you seen my face? I mean, I don't know why I'm amazed, because you can run a marathon in half the time I run one. So.
I've got to tell you, once again, I'm absolutely battered this week from just doing silly things and running too hard and doing too many squats. I go, oh, I need a bigger bum. Then I do 50 squats and then I can't walk the next day. But hey, Annie. You know...
Right. Well, I've got to leave you because I've got to get on my bike because it's the only bit of exercise I'm allowed to do. It's been a pleasure, Annie, as ever.
Get on your bike. I'm going for a glass of wine.
After the bike, I will be having the wine.
Bye-bye, Annie. Take care. Speak to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Berry and I'm one of the co-founders of Her Spirit. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. These podcasts would not have been made possible without the support of the brilliant MediChecks. MediChecks offer an easy and affordable way to check your health with their simple and personalized blood tests. From hormones and nutrition to cholesterol and diabetes, there is something for everyone. Just go to MediChecks.com to find out more. Have a great day.